This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Welcome back, folks. A couple of weeks ago, President Trump had a lengthy conversation with President Putin. And in the aftermath of that, there was a meeting that was held in Riyadh with Secretary of State Marco Rubio and others from the U.S. with individuals from Russia as well, and developing a construct to establish teams to work toward ending the war in Ukraine and a path toward normalizing relations. Obviously, there were some folks that felt they were left out of this process and they should be integral to this process, both this country of Ukraine and our allies in our European nation allies. And here to talk to us about it is Steve Yates, senior research fellow, Heritage Foundation, former deputy national security advisor to former VP Dick Cheney. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. A pleasure to join.
Steve, I guess it's safe to say there are a lot of nervous people right now in light of what's happened thus far.
Certainly. This is obviously a set of circumstances that are affected by what the last 3 years of policy have been. That affects our economy. It affects our defense supply chains. It also just sort of affects what our options are after this war of attrition has been grinding for this long. So how do you get the killing to stop, as President Trump says, hold and win the peace, and then pull together a coalition to rebuild and also continue to boost confidence in the surviving parts of Ukraine? All of these are very important pillars. And so those conversations in Riyadh are very, very necessary for all of those reasons: the ending of the killing, the holding the peace, and getting that reconstruction commitment in there too.
But it would be safe to say this, that this is a delicate balancing act, right? It looks as though the intentions are to sideline Ukrainian officials as well as our allies in Europe.
Well, I wouldn't put it as sidelining the either of them, in all honesty. To a degree, Europe has sidelined itself by not living up to its own commitments, by sort of seeking economic advantage with Russia while also trying to press this security threat to their periphery. And so I hope that what the Vice President and Secretary Rubio and Secretary Hegseth have all been there trying to revitalize and reawaken Europe to taking care of their own neighborhood. We also have General Keith Kellogg, who has spent a lot of time in Ukraine having conversations about what the realities are on the ground now, what's possible under these new circumstances. And so I wouldn't overanalyze each of these steps about who's in the table. There's going to be a lot of conversations. Some are going to be with Ukraine. Some are going to be with Russia. Some are going to be with others. But the objective remains: how do we maximize the security and freedom for the people who have made it through this war? How do you make sure that the fighting stops and stays ended for a time to allow for the resources that Ukraine has been blessed with to fuel growth for their future generation? It's not easy, but we are where we are, courtesy of 3 years of a war that's kind of been adrift.
But our interests don't necessarily all align, right? And is that maybe the reason that European leaders are gathering together to talk face-to-face about where they see this headed?
Well, our capabilities and our interests don't all align completely, but Europe has a lot of wealth. Europe has significant defense capabilities. And the question is, what does Europe really want to look like? I think the offer that they've operated under, where the U.S. pays an inordinate amount of risk and capital up front, and they play somewhat supporting cast, has to be reversed for their own neighborhood. That doesn't mean isolationism or abandonment. I think that over time, you grow out of being somewhat a junior partner to taking lead in your native region. And that allows the United States to be able to deal with very difficult balancing acts in the Middle East, bigger challenges in the Indo-Pacific region, Asia. Those are areas where Europe will be supporting, but not leading. And we need to lead in some of those other areas. So it's rebalancing, and Europe is going to have to adjust. But ultimately, Europe needs to really commit to take care of their neighbors. And America, I think, can and will be there and support when they do. But we've invested $170+ billion in aid to Ukraine. We need to know where that's going and what will come of that. And Europe is going to have to pick up the pace on that, as we have commitments elsewhere.
So is this a forecasting of maybe, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, capitulation of this more of this leadership role and financial leadership that the U.S. has taken in this endeavor?
I would frame it a little differently. I mean, we, after you've given $170 billion to the betterment of another people, I don't think that capital vaporizes and goes to zero. That has to count for something to Europeans, yes, to Ukrainians, and otherwise. And it's not to say the United States won't give any further contribution. I'm sure that there's talk about how that might play forward. And after having given $170 billion in aid and other kinds of help beyond that, surely the United States will actively participate in the reconstruction. There might be mutually beneficial areas there. And if we have accepted a lot of risk and invested a lot in the defense, we ought to benefit, too, from the reconstruction. That's what happened with Germany and Japan in post-World War II. It's not an unusual historical situation. So it wouldn't be disengagement. U.S. is still leading in many ways. We just need the others to step forward where they can literally afford to do so. And that I think, is fair, that is reliable and sustainable. Hopefully, though, I mean, the X factor is we don't know for sure what Vladimir Putin's commitment will be to stop this fighting. We have to make sure the deterrence remains strong. We have to make sure that other forms of leverage are used. Vice President Vance talked about that as well in his conversations in Europe. And the Europeans just need to let us know what are they committed to do at what level. After all, these NATO commitments are not commitments the U.S. imposed. These are commitments that NATO made to each other in the wake of Russia taking the Crimea 10 years ago almost. And so it's really, is Europe going to live up to its own commitments to its own neighbors?
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
You have a lot of experience in this field. How important do you think the territorial gains are going to be for Russia to be able to maintain and keep sane?
Well, that is where these great power talks are going to have to test what is movable in what ways. So going back to Ukraine's pre-2014 territorial boundaries, I mean, the international community made a commitment to Ukraine in exchange for giving up the world's most dangerous weapons, their nuclear capabilities. They were promised territorial integrity. And back in 2014 and 15, that was not honored. And so where are these territorial lines going to be drawn? If they're in areas that are currently occupied by Russia, will the international community still recognize the Ukrainian boundary, but have some kind of peacekeeping effort in those Russian-occupied areas? This all has to be blanks that are filled in. But that begins by having talks. The Biden administration chose not to talk with Russia at all. Fair enough. But you can't really have a sustainable peace if you don't have talks to find out where all sides are coming from and what elements of this we might have a chance to hold.
So in some respect, this is almost partially going to be intelligence, fact gathering, trying to figure out what is in the mind of Vladimir Putin and what's his end game.
What's his end game and what are the realities on the ground? In the Russian occupied areas, we might not have perfect visibility on where things are. And Ukraine is somewhat of a mixed demographic country. It's really tough in these situations if you're trying to read where do the majority of people in one region really want to affiliate versus those in another. This is, you know, the problem when you have wars of the past that draw boundaries and there are demographic and other forces that pull them in other directions. That's why we end up with these kinds of conflicts. And so there's a lot to have to deal with. We're at the beginning of dealing with it, but I support the idea of President Trump placing the first priority in first, let's stop the killing and sustain that and then talk through where are we going forward from here. That I think is very rational, and I think it's been necessary.
Yeah, because I like you, I'm not sure how soon, how quick, or how long before we could ever reach a point where somebody declares victory. I've had a really tough time. I don't know much about all that, but I just had a really tough time getting my head around that and what that would look like. Have you had that same difficulty?
Well, yes, and there have been proposed notions, some of which were articulated by Secretary Hegseth in Europe very recently, but those were developed by people that were officials in the first Trump term that were talked about with the then former president, now current president. Those ideas have to meet with the reality of where will the Ukrainians be in their leadership? Where will the Russians be? And where is there a halting point on this? What will the Europeans be ready, willing, and able to step up and do? Are there other outside powers that are a problem? Like China has been fueling Russia's war machine in differing ways. Is that going to be moderated in any way by what we do or others do? So there's still a lot to fill in. But I think the first thing is, as they say, when you're in the problem of holes, stop digging. And that means stop the fighting, stop the killing, and then figure out what you can do to fill that back in and maybe change the realities and options, but hopefully get better over time.
And you mentioned the defense secretary, my last question. I guess part of this forecasting, too, was the request that they spend, 5% of GDP as opposed to, what was it before, 2, if my memory serves me correct?
Right. No, there's a lot of talk about the percent of GDP, and I support the general notion that more is needed. But I also don't consider it wise to be wedded to the number as much as it is what capabilities are we manufacturing, at what cost, and on what timeline. I mean, America has set a bad example of taking way too long to manufacture something at 10 times over cost. And then you can brag about what percentage of GDP you spent, but it wasn't efficient and it didn't get to the battle space on time. So I think getting the right things to actually reinvigorate deterrence and reassurance for allies and frontline states at their expense is a beautiful way to proceed. And whatever percentage of GDP that requires is what we should go for. But I would not be wedded to numbers on a balance sheet myself. I want real capabilities in the hands that need it so that America is not the 911 on call everywhere all the time.
Yeah. Have everyone combat ready, right?
Exactly. To the maximum extent possible.
Yep. Thank you so much for joining us. We know you're busy. We truly appreciate your time and your insight. Steve Yates, Senior Research Fellow, Heritage Foundation, and former Deputy National Security Advisor to former VP Dick Cheney. Have a great week.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.